a listen to one of the new episodes of Suspense here on Skulls Hall on CITR 101.9 FM.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Tonight, we take pleasure in bringing you Suspense, a weekly anthology of notable melodramas from stage and screen, fiction and radio, presented each week to bring you to the edge of your chair, to keep you in suspense. Detroit, early 1950s. The erstwhile arsenal of democracy had switched back to a civilian footing. It had also emerged as the nation's fourth largest city, with a total population of nearly 2 million. Its three major sports teams had won a combined 5 championships in as many years, and its median income was the highest of any major city in America. Detroit was also renowned for 2 other very disparate reasons. It was an established music center with a jazz scene that regularly attracted the likes of Duke Ellington and Ella Fitzgerald. It was also the home of the Detroit Partnership, one of the largest branches of the infamous Cosa Nostra, the American Mafia. And when those two worlds met, the results were seldom happy.
Evening, Abner.
Evening, Madeline.
I see all my diehard fans are in attendance. I hope they haven't been causing too much of a ruckus, clamoring for me to begin.
Yeah, you know this bunch. The only thing they've been clamoring for is refills.
Yeah.
Hey, don't take it too personal. Clubs here in the theater district live and die by the shows that are playing. And they're a bunch of stinkers right now.
It's okay. I know the score. I'm not exactly Rosemary Clooney. You've got a good heart, Abner. Even if it is tough to hear beating over that sailor mouth of yours sometimes.
Hey, it's a tough job. Somebody's got to talk to these people in a language they'll understand.
I get you, Abner. Have you seen Victor?
Yeah, he's here. Table at the far end. Wait. He's not alone.
Oh, he brought a friend?
You might say that.
I don't understand.
He's with another girl.
Oh.
They've been all over each other since they got here. I'm sorry, Madeline. Look, the guy's a lousy bum. You're better off without him.
I'll talk to him.
Yeah.
Can't do that in a restaurant. Get your hands off me. We're a scandal. Hello, Victor.
Why, Maddie! There you are! We were just talking about you.
Yeah, the sultry singer.
Now, Dolores.
Excuse me? I mean, would you look at that dress?
Now, Dolores, don't be like that.
Oh, don't be like that? Just get a load of that all-black getup. Sheesh. Where's the funeral?
Look, you, I don't know what your problem is, but...
Okay. Put the claws away, ladies.
Victor, what is going on?
Why, nothing at all, Maddie. What makes you think there is? Well...
Victor, who is she?
Who's who?
Your friend.
Oh, you mean my cousin, Dolores.
Cousin?
My cousin, Dolores. She's in Detroit for a visit, so I'm showing her the sights.
Oh, yeah. Cousin Victor's a real swell guy. He's been showing me all the best places.
Nothing but the best from my cousin. Hey, Maddie, why don't you join us for a drink? Dolores and I are just talking over family affairs.
We have a very close family, after all.
I have to start my set.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it was all just a misunderstanding. She's Victor's cousin. She's just visiting.
Cousin?
Yes, his cousin.
And you believe that?
Of course I do. Victor wouldn't lie to me.
Will you listen to yourself? He's lying through his teeth, and you're just gonna let him go ahead and do it without even letting out a peep?
Abner, please.
Abner, please, nothing. Wake up and smell the coffee, Madeline. He's a two-bit hood who's probably been alley-catting on you all along. Only now he's not even doing it on the sly. I don't get it, Madeline. A woman like you, you could have any fella you want.
Any fella, except a true one. Sorry, the dramatics must be a byproduct of my proper southern upbringing.
Why, Madeline? Why do you let Basil treat you like dirt?
Because he said he loved me. And maybe because it's easier to live with a lie than it is to live with the truth.
Madeline,
I should start my set.
And we're So, big boy, you want to show a girl a good time?
No can do.
What about you, handsome?
Gotta watch the bar.
Oh, gee whiz, what's a girl gotta do to make an honest buck around here?
What would I know about making an honest buck? I'm a jazz singer.
You seem to have gotten yourself out of the dumps, but good, Miss Charles.
Why, Abner, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Of course you don't. What I mean is, you're in much better spirits now than you were just 24 hours ago.
Oh, you know what changeable creatures we women are.
Believe me, I know. I was married for 10 years. Changeable is one thing, but you sure look like a woman who went from the depths of depression to the peaks of ecstasy overnight. So what gives?
I don't know. Perhaps it's the change in the weather?
Weather my eye. Come on, out with it. I mean, if you can't tell your favorite barkeep, who can you tell?
I suppose you're right.
Does it have to do with Basso?
Maybe.
Did you finally tell him to take a hike?
Not exactly.
If not that, then what gives?
Well, I'm not supposed to tell anyone.
Madeline?
Okay, I'll tell you. But someplace a little more quiet.
Okay, I'll go out there. Frankie, you're in charge.
Frankie in charge?
If I left no one in charge, they'd both help themselves. This way, only one of them booze hounds is behind the bar pilfering.
Makes sense. I guess that's why you're the boss and I'm the hired help, right?
Right. So what's going on?
Victor said I wasn't to tell a soul about this, but... oh, I just have to tell someone before I explode. You're the best friend I have in the world, Abner, and I know I can trust you with anything.
Damn right you can. So what's the big secret?
Victor asked me to marry him.
He what?
He asked me to marry him. In fact, we're eloping tonight.
Madeline, doesn't this seem kind of sudden? I mean, he was two-timing you with some young floozy just the other night, and now he wants to get hitched?
I know. It all sounds very spur of the moment. But Victor and I have been seeing each other for almost a year now, so it shouldn't come as that big a surprise, should it?
So what caused Basil's change of heart?
I don't know. Last night I decided to go over to Victor's place. I needed to talk with him. Well, when I got there, Victor was with some men and he was doing business.
Business? You mean Basso's kind of business?
I'm not really sure. I overheard them discussing a freighter coming into River Rouge tomorrow night. Sounded very important.
Why? What did they say about it?
Not much. They stopped talking about it as soon as they realized I was there.
They did? What happened next?
Abner, I don't understand what this has to do with Victor and I.
Humor me, will you? What happened next?
Well, at first, they were really sore at me. Victor, most of all. I'd never seen him like that before. Then he calmed down. He took me aside and apologized, and that's when he asked me to elope.
Madeline, listen to me. I think you overheard something you shouldn't have overheard last night.
What? I barely know a thing about that shipment, and even if I did, I'd never tell a soul.
What you actually know doesn't matter. Only what they think you might know. If you go with Basso tonight, you might not be coming back. Madeline, all signs point towards it. You overheard something Basso doesn't want to get out. And you overheard it in front of a bunch of other mobsters. So he can't just pretend it didn't happen. He's already got himself a new squeeze, and he's probably thinking about putting you out to pasture anyway. So he figures, why not kill two birds with one stone? And he cooks up this phony elopement.
Abner.
Only an elopement isn't what he's got planned for you.
Abner.
He'll kill you, Madeline. Don't you get it? If you go with Basso, he'll kill you.
You're a good friend, Abner. And I know you're just trying to look out for me, but I won't believe this. I can't believe it. And even if I did overhear something important last night, Victor's not like that. You just don't know him like I do.
You're right. I don't know him like you do. I know him for what he is. You know him for what you want him to be.
I'm sorry you feel that way, but you'll see. When I come back in a few days with a ring on my finger, Apple, you'll see.
Any word? Ow!
You big dumb mook! Don't you know Abner's all broken up about Madeline leaving last week? For all he knows, she could be dead in a ditch somewhere, with crows pecking at her eyes. And here you are, bringing her name up! Insensitive jerk!
But I didn't even...
Insensitive jerk!
Ow!
Ugh!
Nothing?
No.
Yeah.
Madeline? Madeline, is that really you under that veil?
It's me, Abner.
It's so good to have you back.
It's good to be back. I've missed this place. I've missed you, Abner.
I missed you too. I mean, we all did.
Even my diehard fans.
Even your diehard fans. So what happened?
You're right, Abner. About Victor, I mean. He was no good. He always was. I just didn't want to see it. Victor picked me up that night, only he wasn't taking me to Chicago like he said. He was taking me for a ride over to the West Side. But things didn't go quite the way he planned.
The West Side? What the hell was he thinking? Boss Fonderous wouldn't sit still for Basso being on his turf, much less whacking someone there. Sorry. Given the veil, I'm guessing his luck ran out.
It did.
Listen, do you feel up to coming back to work?
I was hoping you'd ask that. You haven't hired someone else already?
Someone else? You must be kidding. What other singer do you know that could keep these jokers in line?
And on time.
You got that right.
When can I start?
Whenever you feel up to it. But don't wait too long. I don't think I could stand another jazz arrangement of Mary Had a Little Lamb.
No time like the present, then.
Some painted gold.
you so much. We're going to take five and come back with our second set.
Come on, Abner, what gives?
Yeah, come on, Abner, what gives?
I don't know what you two rummies are talking about.
Oh, don't give me that. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, don't give me that. You know what I'm talking about.
That veil. That mourning veil. She's been wearing it for at least a week now.
Yeah, at least a week now.
And it's really spooky.
Yeah, and it's really spooky.
Ow! What was that for?
You insensitive jerk! Someone dear to Madeline passed away, and you're here calling her spooky.
I'm not calling her spooky. I said the veil's spooky. I mean, we don't even know who it's for.
Well, huh. Yeah, that's true. Who's it for?
Not sure. But I figured it was for Basso, that creep mobster boyfriend of hers.
Well, I think Abner's right. It's for that creep mobster boyfriend of hers.
I don't.
You sound pretty sure of that, Frankie.
Yeah. Yeah, how can you be so sure?
Because he just walked into the club.
Okay, so Madeline's not wearing it for the creep. Then who?
Excuse me. Madeline, Basso just walked in.
I know. I've been waiting for him to come back.
But I thought he was dead.
No. Not yet.
Then what?
Abner, it's better that you don't know anymore. Will you do me one last favor?
Anything. You know that.
Please leave the club, just for a few minutes.
What? No way I'm leaving you alone with that bastard.
You have to. I don't want you to see what's going to happen. Please, Abner. Hello, Victor.
No.
What's she doing here? You said she left town.
It can't be.
It's me, Victor.
What in the world's going on?
No. No. You can't be real.
Oh, I'm real, Victor.
No.
You told me you loved me.
No.
And you promised to marry me.
No.
You killed me.
No!
And now, it's time for you to see what's behind my veil.
So ends Madeline's Veil by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes. Tonight's story of Suspense. Suspense is produced by Blue Hours Productions. Tonight's radio drama was adapted for radio by John C. Alzadek and Dana Perry Hayes from their original story. Dana Perry Hayes was Madeline Charles. Rocky Serta was Abner. Damon Krall was Victor Basso. Elizabeth Grayson was Dolores. Adrian Wilkinson was Tallulah. And Steve Moulton was Frankie. I'm Damon Krall. Next week at this time, tune in again for another study in Suspense.
Do you need someone to talk to? If you're seeking a listener who is non-judgmental, confidential, and familiar with resources, then a Speakeasy volunteer might be able to help you. AMS Speakeasy is a peer support service located in the North Concourse of the Sub. If you would like to speak to someone, come to the desk and tell a volunteer, or ring the doorbell located behind the desk.
You're listening to Work Stories. Today we're presenting Top Story, written by Julie Hoversley. Top Story will be coming to you many times, as it has over a dozen chapters. I'm going to be presenting it per chapter. Stay tuned. At the end, there will be an author's note.
Top Story may contain mature subject matter, violence, and foul language. Please listen responsibly. And now, the news.
CEO Flanders of Tech Manglicron, a mega subsidiary, just announced plans for a major upgrade and rollout within the next 6 months.
Local council representatives are being polled for opinions on the new improvement plan for habitation levels 20 through 40 below ground level.
Carrion alert! Those who reside in sectors Beta Gamma 6 and Beta Gamma 11 should watch out. The creatures have been spotted.
And later, kittens. But first...
Top story.
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 Top story. Chapter 1. I stood uncertainly outside the door of a downtown cafe. I was deeper into the city than I'd ever been before, a couple levels below ground, and I was feeling a bit nervous. I was dressed for the occasion, I thought, in a long black overcoat, worn gray jeans and shirt, and an old knit cap on my head. Nothing too flashy, nothing that would make anyone think I was worth robbing, and nothing that made me look attractive. A woman alone is no surprise, even at these levels, but they are only left alone through invisibility or superior firepower. Or so you hear in the Protect Yourself public service bids. I wasn't heavily loaded, just a stunner, but this was midday, and even the low end of the Paradise District was supposed to be relatively safe. I stared out for another moment, examining with interest the many metal walkways that made up both ground and sky in these lower levels. Further uptown, where I live, you can almost see the sky, for what it's worth, and feel the rain before it's run down through dozens of levels of rust and filth, transformed into sludge that hangs in long, slow gobbets before falling on the back of your neck. The neon of the calf sign read, "Smoking Gun," in bilious green lines that flickered spasmodically around the final word. I went in, just past lunch now, and the place was cryptish. I'd come here to meet Fetlock Grimes, one of the key undercover Joes for the Sixer Squad, what us who work at Net3 call the evening news team. He had an info card that just couldn't wait for the regular drop, and I was the only one free for a pickup. I had until 5 to get it into the box, ripped and ready, but had arranged an early meet, just in case I had trouble getting back up. Fetlock wasn't here, but I was prepared to wait. I grabbed a flat space along the way to the loo and ordered some spicy mush that passed for food. I also ordered a beer, straight, and drank it while I kept my plate downwind. The smell alone could depilate anyone's nostrils. I placed myself to face the door, so I saw Fet when he slid in. He pretended not to see me, slouching instead to the lunch counter and ordering the special of the day. It was an interminable 5 minutes after his food came before he finally lurched to his feet and began to drag off to the gents. He was wobbling now, and while it was my opinion it must be the damage his brain took from being too close to the food, he'd left 4 dead soldiers as well. On the way back, he tripped over his own feet, and very well, I might say, being attached to the entertainment biz and recognizing good acting when I see it, then landed roughly against my shoulder. I felt him slip something into my pocket, but only because I was expecting it. As I was nudged, I deliberately upset my dish and let the muck run all over the table, jumping up quickly to vent my fury on the bloody drunk, but also to avoid getting any on my clothes. I vented furiously, and if I was not as good an actor as Fett, I could still play mad just fine. I let the anger carry me outside, walking off in a random direction for a while, just to make sure no one was trailing me. A scoop is a scoop, after all, and it never hurts to be cautious. It's not that I know what's on the card. Won't until I stick it in my terminal and start prepping it for Gertrude Darling to read in the 6-1 slot tonight. 6-2 or 3 if it's not as hot as Fett says. I've often thought that I'd like to be a front newsie rather than a mere rewrite drudge. But then I see the trouble Gert has with going out in public. She could never come to a place like this without an armed escort and a huge camera crew. And even then she might be annoyed, or worse. Terrorists like nothing better than to embarrass or damage. On camera, of course. The front newsies of the true press. Besides, I haven't the right face for serious news. Not thin and pointy enough, really. Instead, I've got a round, friendly face, which will, I've had this on the best authority, keep me stuck in traffic, weather, or human interest if I ever did get on the air. Anonymity suits me, though, at least for now. I'm just Carrie Stomper, whose name shows on the screen for 0.01 millisecond every night. But at least I have a good job, a nice big flat with my own bath and 2 whole rooms, and walls you can't hear neighbors through. Living alone is one of those dreams left over from years of growing up in crowded places not too far above this place here. That's been the sum of my ambition for such a long time, I suppose I should say I'm happy. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught someone taking notice of me, and my first thought was the story thieves I'd been worried about. Of course, he could just be headed the same direction, but it never hurts to be careful, at least not around here. I took the next left, and then the next after that, figuring that if I took three lefts, I would eventually get back to someplace near where I'd been. I'm hoping that there was just no connection, rather than that the laws of geometry don't pertain in downtown, since I soon found myself completely lost. Turning back didn't help either, since every place looked pretty much alike. Walkways between building walls are either dark tunnels, or have those grated floors that show the walkway above or below you, while exterior walkways cling to the building on one side and have a metal rail on the other, to keep people from accidentally stepping off into 20 or more floors of empty air. Nothing much keeps them from deliberately stepping off. The only reason these outer walkways are the least bit useful is that, being below ground, there's not a lot of wind down here. The only good thing about not knowing where I was I'd lost my tail, though if there was anyone behind me, at least there'd be someone to ask for directions. I knew that even down here there was some public transport, tube stops and taxis, if I could just find a depot. This particular area, however, was more interesting than inhabited, with graffitied walls full of lurid colors and suggestions, dripping pipes, and some unidentifiable greenish-yellow stuff growing on the railings. I heard a noise of people down a walkway to the left, one not infested by the chartreuse ooze, and headed that way, hoping to find a store or cafe where I could ask for directions. As I got closer, I realized it sounded a bit too rowdy, violent even. I hung back, both curious, thrilled really to think I might be seeing a six-worthy story unfold in front of me rather than merely typing the copy, and terrified to my marrow that it would be something really bad and I would end up a story myself. 0.01 millisecond copy girl dies horribly in low neighborhood. And they'd peel me posthumously for losing Fett's card. Sod it. I hedged a bit closer, pulling the tiny Vex 2000 still cam from my pocket. Not a vid, but it might get something. I put on the zoom, hung my arm around the corner, and started taking quick shots, just as we all learn to do in Net 3 basic training. No one knows when you'll be the only eyes on a scene, right? I wasn't close enough to see the action, or be seen by it, I thought. I whipped the Vex 2K back and ran through the shots quickly on the display screen, now able to see a troggy gang of teeners kicking on someone who was on the ground and out of my shots. Teeners are the worst when it comes to gangs. They got precious little brains to start with, and none at all after all the crap they shove in through every hole in their heads. I decided to risk a couple more shots, just to see if I could get a squint at the Vic. Aiming down isn't easy, especially when you're round a corner, but I got a partial which I thought might blow up nice. I was so pleased, I got a bit lost considering the details of how to clear up the shot, and came back only when I heard the yowling of the gang. My first thought was that they'd spotted me, and I ducked further back around the corner and into a venal that fit up with the walkway here. They didn't come, though, but kept up their caterwauling. My next thought was that their prey was deceased, and I just had to take one more look. Curiosity is my middle name, right after Jane. My quick peek told me I was right, to be confirmed by three final shots I snagged of a body going over railing and down to bother someone on a lower level. That was when they spied me. Oi! The howls of triumph became screams of fury in a heartbeat, and I ran. The venal was more of a conduit than a proper sort of thoroughfare and had no exits to speak of. I was like a pig in a chute. The only spot of brightness was that they seemed to be taking their own sweet time about coming on. Probably sniffing and drinking more to get them charged. Let them pretend they're proper frothers while they beat up old ladies and vid clerks for sport. I sped on, looking frantically for an outlet. Maybe that was it. They knew I'd no place to go and they were just waiting till I hit the far end. The venal wasn't a straight shot at least, so as it twisted, I kept having some hope of a break around the next corner. Or the next. Nothing for a long time, and I could already hear the tramp of metal-plated souls, just made for kicking the life out of idiots like myself, coming along the echoing corridor behind me, when a dark opening yawned off to my left. The first of several, but I wasn't about to eeny-meeny. I ducked in and yelped in surprise when someone stepped into my way. My only impression was of thick, scruffy hair, a healthy start on a beard, and a stocky frame beneath, all girded round with an aura of hostility. Not a victim, though. This was definitely a predator, and not something in the preschool class those behind me came out of. He grabbed me by my arm before I could jump far enough away, and his other hand shot out to catch my throat and squeeze all sound into silence. He pulled me round, and by the time he loosened up enough that I could breathe again, I found myself tucked behind him in the dark urine-scented alcove. Not an escape at all, just a trap of a different color. The screams and hunting yelps of the teeners were coming closer, but I could still hear his harsh, inflected whisper.
Keep short. We'll send the bastards on. They hear one word and we'll both be free.
Huddled behind him in the darkness, I could only see my rescuer in profile. Not tall, but built thick across, nearly blocking the meager light of the doorway with shoulders alone. That and the accent, and I dreaded to look down. I knew what I would see, and I was terrified all over again, as I tried not to let my eyes wander. If I couldn't see it, it couldn't be true, right?
Don't fuck around, let's get the fuck out.
I vaguely heard the exchange between him in front of me and the passing hound.
Let's go.
It consisted mostly of unprintables, but I think he directed them farther along and gave them the impression he found them amusing. I couldn't hold out any longer. Now that they'd howled past, he'd turn and say something, and I had to know what kind of creature I was dealing with first. I let my eyes drop and was made certain of my doom. He was wearing a kilt. A frother, then.
Until next time. Thank you and good night. Chapter 1 of Top Story was produced by Kimberly Poole of Warp Space, written by Julie Hoverson. Featured Julie Hoverson as Carrie Stomper, the narrator, and Ayub Kote as Stig. Narrative direction by Renaud Leboeuf. Music by Diad. The opening news sequence featured Renaud Leboeuf as Wilton Gobbett, and Gwendolyn Jensen-Woodard of Gypsy Audio as Gertrude Darling. Music for the opening sequence was by The Footage Firm. Sound effects came from soundsnap.com, sonomic.com, and onesoundeffects.com. All persons, places, and events in this story were fictitious or used in a fictitious manner and are not meant to reflect any persons, places, or things, living, dead, or undead. This story and the characters in it are copyright 2012 to Julie Hoverson. This production is copyright 2012 to Kimberly Poole and Hole with a Rock Around It Productions, and is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Spread the show around, but don't try to make money off it. As a side note, or a background note, this story is in a very strange gray area of fanfic, because it uses some minor details, oddly enough, from a role-playing game world called Slay Industries. And those things which do appear that are inherent to Slay Industries are things which I could not change and merely rewrite to remove them from the story. Originally, this was me writing something involving a role-playing game that I was in, though my character was Stig, which says weird, weird things about me as the story progresses. Slay Industries is a game that was produced by Nightfall Games many years ago, and I'll probably have better statistics and things available to me when I do the second episode. I'll give you some more information. But it's a very dark cyberpunk world, and I don't write that dark, actually, most of the time, especially not something like this. So when I was corresponding with some guys over on Team 8, which is a Slay Industries fan forum. Well, I mean, among other things, they have other games there too, but there's a huge Slay Industries grouping there. I posted some of these chapters for them to read there, and they liked them, but they were like, but I'm like, you know, it is Slay Light. It's certainly not really dark enough to be real Slay Industries. And they all agreed with that, and it finally occurred to me what I'm writing. I'm writing what would be appearing on Lifetime Channel if Lifetime existed in Slay Industries. You know, late romantic mystery adventure nonsense. So take it for what it is. You don't have to know the world, because actually the only things I used from the world of Slay that I couldn't undo were basically, Carrion, but I could have replaced that with something else, but it's Frothers. Frothers are such a unique thing to the world of Slay Industries. It was the first place I'd come across anything like this specifically. Specifically, they literally were described as, generations back they were human, but they've taken combat drugs for so long that they're now technically a different species. And while it doesn't actually say in the rule book that they're all mad Scotsmen, their basic equipment kit does include a kilt and a claymore. So you can draw your own conclusion. Oh, and the game was written by Scots, so that also says a lot. I'll have more after the next episode. This is going to go on for a while. Enjoy.
Hello, my name is Kim, and I'm a podcaster.
Hi, Kim.
Please listen carefully.
Project Space is hosting Canada's only international art book fair in Vancouver, and it's free and open to the public. This festival of artists publishing features books, magazines, zines, and printed ephemera, as well as digital, performative, and other experimental forms of publication. The Art Book Festival takes place on October 17th and 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. at the Vancouver Art Gallery.
Are you not sure where to go on campus? Traveling late at night and afraid to go alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
And that's just about all the time that we have for Skulls Hall. I hope that you enjoyed it. And I hope that it made your week slow down a little bit, give you a chance to wind down a little bit. And we'll do the exact same thing next week. I believe we will be on the air. I don't think we're going to be fully preempted. So, come 9 o'clock next week, we will have another chance to relax with more of the very best of spoken word entertainment here on Skulls Hall. And from all of us here in Vancouver, this is Brian McDonald, signing off.
You've been troubled, you've been broke, you've been hungry. Mm-hmm.